Welcome to the Spark Girls podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J. And this week we have Patricia McClynn with us.
Hey, Pat.
Hi, Pat. So good to see you all.
Yeah. Now, Pat's going to talk to us about kind of ways to help you through the tough times, like skills and tools that you can kind of develop to kind of make it a little bit smoother when you're going through something that's not so easy to go through. But first, I'm going to read her bio, and then we'll get right into the questioning on the topic. Patricia McClynn's books have put her name on bestseller lists, and her journalism career took her to the Washington Post for 20 mumble years. With more than 60 novels published, her stories often include dry humour in exploring the resilience of people, whether in murder mysteries, romance, romantic suspense, or women's fiction. So today we're going to talk about the resilience of authors and how we can use that resilience to kind of get through the tough times, or when something when we come up against a problem, basically, and we need to sort of try and make our way through that. So, but first, actually, before we get into that, so Patricia, we had you on in 2019 was the last time, and it was it was episode number, I wrote it down somewhere, episode number 189, and it was all about pantsing. Are you still a pantser? You still pants everything?
Oh, yeah. Still
so,
right out of order.
So just quickly, in a sentence or two, let us, what have you been doing since 2019? Like, how's it, between then and now? 6 years in a nutshell.
Let's see. Well, there was a pandemic, writing, trying to market, writing.
More writing.
Writing murder mysteries. People who annoy me die in my books.
So, Cheryl. So you're still writing the same thing. Yeah, you're still writing the same books. You're still haven't diversified in any way, or
I have 3 murder mystery series. I have 10 romance series, and I never say any of mine are finished because then I get an idea. And off we go.
All right, so today the official title was When the Going Gets Tough, 5 Elements You Can Foster to Keep Going. So let's start with that first element that you've got on your list, and talk through that one. What's the first thing people can do?
Because I want to say first, I mean, things are tough. They're also wonderful, and they can be both simultaneously. And I think the business is as simple now as it's ever going to be in the future. We are not going to simplify this business. So these skills help you get through all those changes and those things. And the number one thing, Trudy, is to know your number one reason for writing. What is your number one why? And I think you've got to figure it out, and I'll come back and we'll talk about how to figure that out and hold on to it. Do you want me to keep going with the other ones, and then we'll come back and let's talk through that.
Yeah. The whole of the why, like how do we find our why? Let's do it that way.
The only way I found that I could do it is an exercise that I do, and it makes you pare down. And I did that for the Australia Romance Writers Association as a keynote when I was there. And I recorded a version of it. It wasn't when I was actually doing it. So that's on the internet for free under 3 words on writing with Patricia McClynn. And I also do it. I've done it with writers at conferences when I can corral them someplace and make them, because you have to have somebody making you do it. I think it's really hard to do it on your own. If you listen to the video, and really play by the rules, it will get you through the process. But it's a matter of, you know, putting down all your reasons and then start giving them up and knowing that you would keep writing, even if you didn't make money, even if you got no accolades, whatever the initial reasons you put down. And what I find with a lot of writers is it surprises them. Mm-hmm. And I've had some people who said that their number one reason was to hang out with their friends. Mm-hmm. You know, when that's your number one reason, and I will tell you, my number one reason is to get these people out of my head, because it gets really crowded and cranky in there if I don't.
Yep.
That's so different from if your number one reason is to make an income to support your family, you know, to pay the rent, to buy the groceries. And that is going to affect all of your decisions. And there are so many decisions to make. And I think we all try to make all the decisions, you know, and to do all the things. But if you are focusing and narrowing down to your number one, is this serving your number one reason? It makes things a lot easier. Mm-hmm. It makes things a lot clearer.
Mm. Yeah.
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 It makes sense.
Do you think that reason changes, or is it always the one driving force behind?
That's a great question, Wendy. I think it does change for some people. And so if you're floundering and you can't quite get your feet under you, go back and do the exercise again. And if you can't do it yourself, listen to it with a friend and do it to each other. Listen to the free video and then do it back and forth. And the other thing I want to say about it that I think is really important is that nobody else has to know the reasons that you write down.
Yeah.
Nobody else has to know your number one reason. You can be, you know, if it is to make money, it's to make money. And you don't have to, you don't have to explain to anybody. You don't have to be apologetic. It's your reason. It's inside you. Be true to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea that it's you have to give things up too, because I think there's a lot of times where we say that we're doing things, we have this why that's what we think we should have as our why. What the common zeitgeist tells us that we should have for our why, because that's what authors do or whatever.
And see what that is, Trudy? That's coming from outside of you instead of yours, instead of inside of you. And that's what the whole effort of this is, to get to what's inside of you.
So it's a real gut thing. What's deep in your gut? What your passion is, what your reason is. It's got to come from deep within. It's not the external noise. You've got to get rid of that.
Yeah. Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I really like that one. That's cool.
Mm.
We'll
be doing that.
Yeah, we'll be doing that after.
We'll be doing that again.
Again. If you guys want to do it, I am happy to do it with you. I would love to do it.
Thank you.
I would love to do it with other people at some point. I don't know how I could do that, how I could arrange it, but maybe some way we can do this.
Yeah, cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a live stream of that cracking the whip.
That would be really cool.
That's perfect.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to number two on the elements. So what is it? What is the second thing that we can do?
The second thing is to have perspective on what these changes are. And there's a lot of anxiety out there now. And first of all, I think trade anxiety for excitement, you know? Anxiety doesn't really do, I was going to say it doesn't really serve you. And maybe in old times it did, but I don't think it's as I think excitement serves you better than anxiety. One of the things I look at, all the changes that are being talked about are methods or tools. None of them, AI, you know, ads working, not working, selling direct, not selling direct. Those are all tools. They have nothing to do with the core of what we do. Nobody has changed the core of storytelling. Mm. Nobody has changed the satisfaction of reading a story that speaks to you, or of writing the story that speaks to you. So I think it's important to put this in perspective. that those changes are small stuff, you know? Another factor I think we should keep in mind as writers is in the course of a book, you make your characters change, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's good for them, because they become stronger people, because they learn things that let them live a better life. Well, guess what? Here we are, and no change isn't necessarily fun and comfortable, but it's going to make us stronger. Mm-hmm. And you think about that, you know, how you build muscle by resistance against other things. So we are building our change muscles.
Yeah.
And I want people really to focus on, you know, when changes come, the focus it tends to be on the cons, but almost every change also brings pros. Mm. So you need to watch for those. Cheryl, I see you.
Well, I was just thinking back to those words because they're kind of like stuck in my mind now, anxiety versus excitement, because they are, in fact, polar opposites, aren't they? Whereas excitement can push you forward. Anxiety is only ever going to hold you back, isn't it?
Oh, you know,
anxiety and fear.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's a great point, Cheryl. Mm. And one of the things I see is people talking, particularly about AI, of we've got to stop it. Well, when has that ever worked? You know,
exactly.
When in history has saying something new in the advance and new technology and going, no, I don't want it. It's changing things. It is changing things, and it's going to change things in ways that we cannot now predict. And some of them we will like and some of them we won't. But again, I come back to it doesn't change that core of what's a satisfying story. And maybe it will change how the stories are told. I don't think it'll happen really, really quickly. But no matter what it does, sitting back and saying, oh, woe is me, is not going to accomplish anything. It's doing the opposite. So you need to find ways to look at the change and not let it drag you down. And also try to find ways that will make you excited about it and give you new energy.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't want to be informed, but you shouldn't let it drag you down rabbit holes of what could be.
And not losing sight of the fact about the story, you know, like that's, I think there's so much external noise now, we do lose sight of that. And a good story is always going to be there, right? Building in your career, longevity, all of that sort of thing. A good story written well is always going to be there. And I think we lose sight of that sometimes. Yeah. You're right.
I was listening this morning. It's a bit of a tangent, but I'm going to go there anyway, to a podcast with Brendan Kane, who's like an expert for social media. And he said something along similar lines, and he was talking about social media and saying how people think because social media is so easily accessible, and that we can all do it, we can basically all turn on our phones, record us talking into the phone, and then load it onto TikTok, so it's easy, it's really easily accessible. But the fact that not everyone is going viral on TikTok means that it's actually still a level of knowledge or story. He talks about using story in his social media posts. There's still that level of knowledge and expertise required to create a good story that's going to be interesting to people. And I think it's the same for us. It's like some of these things are going to make it more easily accessible, perhaps, to people who weren't able to be writers before. But it's still that core of it, that writing a good story, and that's all of us are doing. And we have been learning all this time. So as you say, I don't think it needs to be as big a
We're always rushing, right?
Yeah.
We're just rushing to get the next big thing. But Pat's saying, we don't lose sight of what the fundamental is, that we write a good story.
And
I want to come back to something you said, Trudy, about the learning. Because you got to remember, and this is harder for us who've been around for a long time, but when we started, we didn't know how to do this. We didn't know how to write a book. We did not know the tools we needed or how to use those tools. We learned it. Well, you keep learning new tools and you keep adjusting and adapting what works for you and dropping what doesn't. And also, Cheryl, you said something about, you know, knowing what's coming and knowing what's going on. I think that's really important. I think you need to know, because fear is going to hold you back every time. And not knowing is born out of fear. So know what is there. It doesn't say you have to do anything. You have to use this or you can't use that or whatever. But know what your options are. And then you don't, then you're not operating out of fear, because it just doesn't work out well.
And fear is where that anxiety comes into it as well. It's like it's a really difficult place to be making decisions from. If you're sitting in the fear and the worry and the anxiety, it's hard to kind of see how you're going to move forward.
Closes you up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you can't see beyond the fear, right?
Mm.
It's like that's your narrative, but you got to,
And that's the third point, that half of what's going on is you.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff happening out in the world that's external, but now we're talking about how you respond to it. And we've edged into that, talking about the anxiety and try to replace that with some excitement and curiosity. I shorten this to a little saying of, you are not the boss of me.
Yeah.
Apparently it's something I said to my older siblings a lot when I was a kid. And to me, the you are those changes, are the things that are making, you know, publishing different and tougher, maybe better, who knows. But all those changes, the uncertainties, they are not the boss of us.
Mm.
We determine how we feel about them. We determine how we deal with them. And I'm really interested in how the mind works, and I've done some research, and there's some really interesting stuff. And one of the things that they talk about is that how we think affects our feelings. How we feel can also affect our thinking, but there is more recent research into how we think and how we express the thoughts in our heads can really affect how we feel. Mm. So, and I found this wonderful thing. I don't know if this is scientifically backed or not, but it was somebody saying that instead of saying affirmations out loud, that you sort of half mumble them. That if you sub-vocalize, if you vocalize completely, what you're doing is not listening, because you're thinking about what you're going to say next. If you sub-vocalize, you're listening to it more. And the example used was people who hear voices, that they believe the voices and they are going, you know, they mumble, and there's been some very initial research into this, but I thought, you know, other than going around and having people maybe think you're crazy for mumbling, I'd find this, right? I'm thinking, you know, I write fast with ease and inspiration. And mumble, I write fast with ease.
And see
if that helps. And for sure, there is scientific research into the thoughts that you have over and over create an expressway in your brain. This is my really scientific explanation for it. And so that if you have negative thoughts, if you have scared thoughts, anxious thoughts, and you keep having them, what you do is you create an expressway for them. So you want to pull back from that, make it harder for those little suckers to get through, and do expressway for better thoughts.
And it must be really hard if you've created that expressway. You've been thinking the negative thoughts for a long
negative
time.
Negative one,
You can't just sort of suddenly stop it and go, okay, today I'm going to be positive. You
kind it's of retraining, to, right?
Yeah.
It's retraining. But you got to start today.
Because
saying it's hard, it's not going to get any easier. And if you start chipping away at it. Maybe you're just taking a pebble out of that expressway right now, but you keep working up.
I think we're a little bit dangerous, all of us, of leaping in too. Like, I know I am. I want to leap in and go, yes, everything's great and rah, 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 and I'll do it for a day. So it's a lifestyle change, right? It's a mental shift.
Well, you're saying, so you're saying that you jump into things because you're too positive. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, probably. I don't know if I'm too positive. I don't know if these guys would agree with that. But
I think maybe and then do you flip the other way?
I will try something once or twice. And if there's not instant, something doesn't work instantly, then I'm out.
Okay. So this, remember I said you're half of this equation.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think that's the fear of missing out on something. Like you're not, not at the forefront of it. You know, you haven't.
But it's that noise thing, right? We were just talking about it.
But then
that
you go back to your number one reason. Yeah. Is it serving your number one reason for writing?
Yeah, and that's the key,
yeah.
And if it's not, maybe you still jump into it. Maybe you say, what the heck, I want to try this. But you recognize that it is not serving your number one reason and that you are indulging yourself. And I tend to do the flip. I will gripe and I will, you know, something hits you and, you know, it's like gripe and moan and whine. And then you move on, you know, but you got to vent, at least I do. I have to vent that initial. I'm not sure how you spell that. But
it'll be interesting on the transcript.
I also think I hear, you know, if it's so rah-rah, but if you think it's insurmountable, it is. I truly do think, you know, you got to come back into who you are and what you're responsible for. And you are responsible for a lot of this. Yeah. And that includes, and this may be for you, Wendy, realistic optimism.
Maybe.
Critical thinking. And I think the opposite of those two things, the opposite of realistic optimism and critical thinking is, I hope I can say this right, catastrophizing. Is that right?
Spell
it, you guys.
Don't ask me to spell it.
you got to be realistic about these things. And indulge the drama for a minute. And then pull yourself back. Take a breath and think, you know. Did you guys see the April Fool's joke about the...
the Kalytics one? Is that the one that
you're talking about? Oh, my Lord. That didn't go down so well, did it?
What was it? I missed it.
Okay, there was an April Fool's joke by Kalytics about a new program from Kindle, basically, about write your own story.
Write
your own story.
Did you see it, Travis?
I saw it, but I didn't realize it was a joke.
Yeah, so didn't go down well, mate.
Okay, but this is where you got to employ your critical thinking. I opened it, and now I had the advantage. The first thing I saw was the font was wrong for the New York Times. And do you realize what it said up there on the header? It said New York Times. And then you look at the name of the writer, and the last name is Mirth. It was a kind of a weird setup of reporting from Seattle. Newspapers don't do that. In the first paragraph, let me see, I want to get this right. In the first paragraph, it said it had 4 billion users in 24 hours of beta. My alarms had been caught by New York Times. They wouldn't have been going up.
And I can't believe I missed all that. That's really funny.
Yeah. We just went straight to what it said.
You have to come back and think, is this true? And I think especially in these days, I mean, it's not just writing, but because we're focusing on the writing world, there are so many changes. I think you do have to approach each thing with that thought of, is this true? And then use the, you know, examine it. Does it make sense? 4 billion users in 24 hours in a beta does not make sense, you know? And then he had things like fictive Amazon VP Andrew Bookman. And as you went down, he was more and more blatant. There was a fictional, you know, you start searching for fiction. So,
but we all read it and instantly got up in arms about it, right?
But I think, I mean, just because people are writers doesn't mean that their reading comprehension is great. No, I see that on Facebook all the time. People will read in writing groups, I'm talking about, maybe the first three words of a post have the meaning that they think is behind that post, and then get all up in arms. It's usually, you know, and I think this is a really good reminder to, you know, this is a working example that all of us need to just slow the heck down and think about it. Like, you know, and maybe it's post-pandemic years, people are a bit more on edge. I think there's an element of that, just in general. But also there is a lot of change, and I think people, any whiff of anything changing, people are immediately, their guard is up. That's my that's my read on it. Yeah. As much as I mock those people, because it was so obvious. Like, it was so obvious.
The people just read too fast.
It's a fabulous reminder, as you said, to address those things, to think, to question your assumptions. You know, it's what Becca Syme says all the time, to question the premise. But you also have to question your own assumptions. And I question what you're told. So one of the first things I always do, that is, I know Trudy will be right on this too, is you check the source. Who's the source for this information? And that's,
I'm always saying that to my daughter, like, she, you know, this generation of kids coming up online, and she's she'll say this thing to me, and I'm like, where did you get it from? Like, who told you that, and why?
So her automatically best friend, believing sisters, mothers, aunts, you know, often, twice removed.
Not even that. Like, often it's like, I saw it on a YouTube video, so it must be true. And I'm like, no, not at all.
So yes, and you need to question what you think too.
Yeah,
I like that.
Question what people are telling you, and question your own thinking.
You said that earlier about curiosity, and I think that's exactly what you're saying here. It's like that, instead of getting into something with anger or getting worked up, like, look at it with curiosity. Like, look to it, and even with, like, topics like we were talking about, getting perspective on things like, I don't know, direct sales or AI or what's the other one you mentioned, ads, like those are, you know, those are things you just look at it with curiosity, look at it with a filter of your why, and kind of, you know, like, do these things in a
And ease your way into it too, you know what I mean? I think we, I know what I'm like, I rush into things, but I think small steps, you know.
Well, and I think part of that small steps, Wendy, is to look at the counter view. So you come into something with a lot of enthusiasm, you think this is going to be the answer to Facebook ads. I must have said that 48 times, so so then you look at that, if they Google or use ChatGPT or AI of some kind, and go in and do what you think is going to be the solution, and add problems or trouble or disappointing. Now, if you're coming into it with the opposite view, this is horrible, then look in and add benefits, positive. Get that counterbalance view, because you can't really make a decision based on one angle. You know, we're used to, this is another, we're used to writing stories from multiple points of view. That's what you need to do. We've got that skill, guys. So use it. Look at the multiple points of view on what we're dealing with, and the changes. And challenge, you know, challenge. Use your what ifs too. That's another great author skill. And you apply it to the, well, what if they're not telling the truth in this, article? And that will start your critical thinking too.
What if this thing that I'm against is actually a good thing? What if it was, What if it was a good thing that we were doing this new thing? I don't know. Just trying not to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. 100. Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you have to 100% change your view, but it opens your, it instead of narrowing your thinking, it's opening it. Yeah. And that's going to make you more open. One of the things they talk about all the time in like futurists, professional futurists. Why did I not know about that profession when I was a kid? I would have loved that. But yeah. they talk about, they don't give a specific, this is what's going to happen. They give a range of things.
Yeah.
And usually with milestones that might, you know, you're progressing through time. If this happens, then these three things are more likely. If that happens, then those four things are more likely. But then if this happens, then these other things are more likely. So it is not a straight path. It's not monolithic. You have all these possibilities, as we do when we write stories. You know, guys, you are so equipped for this. We truly are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think
we do lose sight of that.
The other thing to remember is that you're only harming yourself if you keep, you know, like you get up in arms about something. There's some new drama in the author world, and I don't mean to sound cynical, but there's always some new drama in the author world.
Always, the longer you're in it, the more you realize.
But
we do like drama.
We do like the dramas. That actually getting up in arms, spending all your time, going down the rabbit hole, getting angry about it, talking about that with your friends, whatever, you're only harming yourself. You're not writing, you're not feeling creative when you're angry, are you? Like you're kind of narrowing down.
You're spending a whole lot of energy on stuff that you don't need to be spending energy on. Yeah, and that's taking away from what you need.
The caveat I would say is there are things that can, I think I was so involved with the Harlequin lawsuit. And that was a huge drain of energy and time and creativity. Yeah. And it lasted for 5 years. But by gum, we got a settlement. And more important to some of us, we proved them wrong.
It matters, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Sometimes you have to make a stand.
Yeah, I guess it's deciding whether the stand is worth it to you.
It is definitely that judgment of is this something? And actually, when it started, I didn't think anything could be done about it.
It was a Goliath versus, you know, it was
how stupid do they think I am?
Yeah.
It was what I said out loud in my kitchen, and then writing a letter. And thinking I was going to be the only one, and other people joined in, and it just kept growing. And so it wasn't like I started off thinking, okay, we're going to do a class action lawsuit. It was, this is wrong. I'm going to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's all it had been, I would have been not nearly as happy, but I would have known I'd done what I could.
Yes, at that point.
Yeah.
So
because you couldn't not do anything, you needed to do something. Yeah.
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 You know, that's a really good point, Wendy, because when something is driving you absolutely nuts, if you don't do something, that also can tear away at your creativity and your energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to come back and judge for yourself. How crazy is this making you?
Mm.
What can you do to make yourself less crazy? Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, very valid point.
That wrapped up the whole talk, I think.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we need to talk about money. Yeah, yeah. we better move on to four, haven't we? So what's element number four?
Element number four is having money cushions.
Mm-hmm.
Not sexy, but it is vital, because especially in these times with lots of changes. Because what the money does is it gives you time to adapt. It bridges you, you know, it carries you through, and it lets you take advantage of the new stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're not stuck in having come from the traditional world and then going into indie, I saw so many people who were tied to the income in trad and they could not take advantage of indie. You know, now this is 15 years ago. But you don't want to get yourself in that position. You want it more and more and more. As more things change, you want to be flexible. That's one of the huge things that indies have. And starting off indies have more of an advantage there because they're more adaptable. Those of us with big lists, it's a pain in the patootie to go, you know, to seven retailers and change 65 books. I think I'm done doing that. So have those money cushions and build them up. And I also think it's vital that what you make determines what you can spend. Mm-hmm. You don't start off with what you want to spend. No debt. No debt is the least usable, the least utilitarian thing in the world. Mm-hmm. In my very humble and softly spoken opinion, right?
Yeah.
So cutting expenses, I have some really specific, go through your expenses from the previous year. Any yearly ones that you can get rid of, get rid of. Those tools that are no longer serving you, you know. Mm-hmm. We talked about adding new tools. Well, you're also going to be shedding old ones. Look at the one-offs.
Nothing worse than, I don't know if anyone else has done this, but a recurring cost that I had one where I was paying for it and I felt like I couldn't, it wasn't a massive amount, but I felt like I hadn't used it. I hadn't gone and got the downloaded or looked or watched any of the videos. So I felt like I had to keep it on so that next month I could do it. But then next month I didn't do it. And then I had to keep it on because it wasn't a big amount, but I was paying this recurring monthly fee for about 2 years. And I looked at like maybe half an hour's worth of these videos, which were awesome videos. And I should have been but it was just this, and it was stupid. And in the end, I just had to cancel it and waste.
Ever done that, Trudy?
Yeah, I know, right? Only person. No one else has done that in their life. But isn't it funny? And that's a subscription model that.
Yep.
There's a very big part of what we do these days. And I think,
I was paying Libsyn for my podcast, like $20 a month, I think. And I suddenly realized I could drop it to $5 a month. And I could still had enough storage in the whole thing. And every time I see that $5, I think, ooh, that's good. And then I think, darn, how long did I go?
Yeah.
Those are great things to do.
Yeah, money cushions.
I think going back and looking at the previous year's one-off expenses, if you look at them and you think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, that starts honing your skills for the upcoming. You can't undo the past stuff, but it hones those skills for your upcoming one-offs. So I think it's really worthwhile. A lot of people talk about having multiple streams of income, especially those that you can set up and then not do anything more with, like affiliate money, which I don't know about you guys, but it has withered lately. It is really minus. So another thing I do is interest. I started using Wise, which will pay interest in whatever, well, I shouldn't say, it pays US dollar, UK, and EU. It will pay interest, different rates on different ones. And one of the things I do with Wise is I have a web guy and also he does my newsletter who's in the UK. So I have my Amazon money go into that. My Amazon UK earnings go into my Wise UK account and are paid out in UK money.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing double conversion fees. And it's not very much money, but every little bit, these dribs and drabs add up.
I've heard it called money leaks, like shoring up any money leaks around that.
Yeah,
exactly what you're talking about. And I love that way of talking about it. And it might be a little bit here and a little bit there, but it adds up. It does add up.
It sure does. Yeah. Each individual one isn't very much. And then, you know, if you've ever had a faucet that dripped, a drip at a time, and you were away for a month.
Well, we had that. We had a house. It was a family. We call it bachelors in New Zealand, but a family holiday home. And we hadn't visited for a couple of months. And I think a plumber had gone in to install something, and it hadn't put. It was something simple, like a little olive was missing, and it dripped. It dripped over the course of 2-3 months or whatever, however long it was. And we got there, turned up there, and the entire top floor was completely destroyed. Oh. The carpet was gone. It was mold everywhere. It was just from a little tiny drip that wasn't even, like, it wasn't even a trickle. It was a drip, you know. So it does add up, and it does create
you are a cautionary tale.
Yes, exactly. I am. In many, many ways.
Another thing I feel really strongly about is putting aside, like, the if you're using a tool and you really like it, annualize the expense. Don't do it until you know you're going to keep using it. Mm. But there's almost always a discount. But then put aside 1/12 of that annual fee every month in your budget. Push it aside, because you don't get those nasty surprises, you know, where there's suddenly, oops, you know, all the money for the year from Railroad Light is due, or whatever it is. You've got some put aside, and it reminds you every month that you are paying for this. Mm-hmm. And that helps, I think, Trudy, with what you were talking about, that it reminds you every month, do you really want to have that ongoing or not? Is it time to get rid of it? Is it time?
Yeah.
You know, you could have cut that off and gone back to it later.
So many things I could have done. Instead of just keeping paying and not using it.
It's very kind of you to share that with all of us.
We're all guilty of that.
Yeah.
I also think it's really important to look at hiring people. And one of the things, this is a more recent thing that I'm thinking about, is it's hard to do, but to try to gauge, it can be less expensive to hire somebody who costs more per hour and is more of an expert and more specific to your needs than somebody who costs less per hour. So just factor that in to your thinking of who you're going to hire and who, you know.
And that kind of goes against our thinking in some ways. You go, there's this person who's $5, this person $50. Of course I'm going to go with the $5. But actually the $50 person gets it done in an hour. The $5 person takes 10 hours to figure it out.
You don't have to come back to that person. You know, there are a lot of factors in what makes somebody you hire valuable. I think that's a great point, Trudy. Another thing that I feel really strongly about is there's the business's money and there's my money. Mm-hmm. When you start off, some of your money is probably going to fund it. I still would not go into debt. I would save up your money to do that. And yes, I know there is at least one quite successful author who talks about having gotten a loan to get started.
Mm.
No. No.
Yeah.
Because I also know, you know, 200 authors who never got out of debt when they did that. Just save up the money and then do it. And then once the business is self-supporting, then it's got to stay self-supporting. It's got to earn its way. And money goes from the business to me. It never goes from my money to the business's money. Mm-hmm. Never. I'm pretty stubborn about that. Okay. Anything more about money, guys?
No,
I think it's just good business practice, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It can be really hard to remember good business practices when you're going, but I want to try these ads.
I'd really like to do that promotion, and it's just on for this amount of time, and I need to do it now. And
you know, that's a really great point, Cheryl, because I think one of the things we all have is the perspective of having been around for a while. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't have to do it right now. Mm-hmm. And maybe come back and remind yourself, what are you going to be happy with in 5 years, 10 mm-hmm. years, 15 years? I will tell you, it's just over 35 years since I sold my first book.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was 12. No, I better go.
I was absolutely. Five. We can see that.
Mm-hmm. A genius child.
So, yeah.
I think if you are going to spend, like, go into debt or whatever for something, maybe just understand that you might not, like, it has to be money that you're prepared to lose. Basically. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. you create and a budget for ads so and you, pardon?
And not pay interest on it.
That's what
horrifies me about going into debt.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson said, he said it kind of differently. He said, worry is interest on a debt not yet incurred.
Mm.
Yeah. That goes back to our anxiety and fretting, Cheryl. Mm. But I was thinking of interest. It doesn't apply to money. Sorry about that. Mm.
That is a very good saying. That definitely applies in terms of what we're talking about with worry. Mm. Yeah.
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 Mm. In fact, my husband says, why worry about something twice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that saying.
Good point. If you're going to worry about it later, why put that worry in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's do number 5. Sanity cushions.
Sanity cushions. To get you through all these changes and tough times and all those things. And some of the elements we've talked about help with the sanity cushions. I think the number one most important thing to realize is we do the insanity to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is self-inflicted. And I am talking to myself here.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying I'm good at this necessarily. I think one of the big things is to look at the big picture. And this comes back to the 5 years, 10 years, 15, 35 years, which helps to know that things pass, that things even out, the bad times go by, the good times go away. You mm-hmm. know, it just, nothing stays the same way. So you gotta roll with it pretty mm-hmm. much. I think the biggest sanity cushion is friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And having people you can talk to.
Yeah.
Having people who will say to you, you know, they listen to your idea, that you have an idea, I may do this, I may do that. And as Jean Orem said to me lately, is that because you don't have enough to do?
That's true.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that put it in perspective. Thank mm-hmm. you, Jean. And one of the things, I mean, this sounds a little harsh, but we trade time all the time. And I think you need to think about what you're willing to trade to live up to the tyranny of your to-do list.
Mm.
And mm. I'm terrible about this. And my to-do lists are all over the place, and they add things and they're little bitty writing and they're nuts and they are tyrannical. And what do you trade to do those to-dos?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly you trade time, mm-hmm. and you're trading time with friends and family, mm-hmm. dogs, garden,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
reading.
Yeah.
Have we not all traded?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. our absolutely.
Tyrannical yeah. to-do lists. So we just don't think about it that way, that what we are trading. And I find that helps because it makes use of one of my skills, which is guilt.
So, skill.
I'm really good at being guilty.
Are we sure that's a skill?
What you got, Trudy? I got skill. So I figure, oh gosh, I shouldn't. Yeah, great. I can knock three things off the to-do list, or I can spend time with family.
Mm.
You know? And the other thing is those darn to-dos, you don't know whether they're going to pay off or not. Usually spending time with family or the dog or the garden or whatever does pay off. So, and friends. Mm. I read something not long ago about to-do lists that I absolutely loved. Didn't like a lot of the other stuff the guy said, but he set it up so that before he put anything on his to-do list, he challenged that activity to earn its spot on the to-do list.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think I mindlessly add all these things to the to-do list. And they're actually given kind of equal weight. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. I think one of the things I started doing coming back from the NINC conference every year, I sit in the airplane and I'll write all the list of to-dos that come from there. And then I'll go and assign them letters, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever. Yeah. And then I reorder it. So the A's are here, the B's are here, the C's are here, the D's are here. And you look at the E's and F's and go, you know, but if you just have it in the original list, they have the same weight as the A's and the B's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to prioritize that.
Yeah, 100%.
Another sanity question.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say, prioritize anything. Like, I think one of the things we do with, like, for example, family and friends is that we, like for me, I've got a 12-year-old daughter and she'll come and say, oh, Mum, can you do this thing? And so I can either say, yes, I'll do this thing for you, or no, I won't. And it depends on where I'm at. Like sometimes it's like, well, actually, this is something you can do really easily for yourself. And you're kind of just asking me, I'm not even sure why, and you can go do that. Or B, I'm going to do it for you because it's part of spending time with you and part of that family time that I have created. So there's kind of like, but you have to know what your priorities are and kind of, and not like there's a real, when you're a mum, especially, I think doing stuff just because, or because you have been, or not really thinking it through. And like you say, choosing to do that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because I have a dog and I was thinking that, you know, sometimes the priorities are like, I hear myself saying, let me finish this one more thing before you have to go out. Mm. And then I think of the downside. don't get her out. She needs to go.
Yeah.
So in that way, sometimes dogs are less forgiving than kids.
Yes,
they are. Well, I mean, the consequences.
There's things you have to do, obviously, as a parent, but I just mean that sometimes it's not, sometimes it's out of habit or I'm not even sure, like just a need to kind of say, Mum, I'm here, come pay attention to me, and not because she really needs me to do that thing.
I also like what you said, that basically you're looking too at the long term, that there are things that if you take this time now, it can benefit your relationship and her skills in the long term. Mm. Where I keep coming back to these darn tyrannical to-do lists, and we think, oh no, I got to do that right now, and that may not be the best use of your time.
Yeah, and sometimes we just add things to the list because we're worried we're going to forget about that thing, and it did seem like a cool thing at the time, but actually, do you really have time for it?
Absolutely.
Just put it on there anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe as you add it to the list, you assign it a letter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm adding to this list, but it's a C.
Mm. Yeah.
And then as you look at your list, you think, oh, and you pay more attention to the other items.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely prioritization is the way forward, I think.
Yeah.
Especially for us in this self-published era where you could be awake 24 hours a day for 10 years and still not get everything done. Like, you know, there's you have to kind of choose and niche down and decide what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. Yeah, which takes you back to number one, choose your why, so that you know.
Yeah. There we go.
It's all a big circle. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, now always come back and check the impact against your number one. I think, one of the things I think too is if you look at it as like a character arc, We know how to build character arcs. Do it for ourselves. Mm. Where are we starting? Where do we want to get to? What do we have to do in between to get there?
Mm-hmm.
It's a heck of a lot easier to do it for characters. It is, yeah, truly. Yeah. but we have the skill to do that. So if we can put it in those terms, maybe that helps.
And if we think about it, if we're going to go with that, is overwhelm, being angry or being worried the whole time going to get your character from where they are to where they want to be? And we all know the answer to that, don't we? And and if the character starts out with those three things, what do you have to do to kind of create that character out and get them where they're going, and it's not continue on in the worry and the overwhelm and the anger or whatever, you know?
Well, and if you start a character with those three things, how many people are going to want to read about that character for very long? You better get them out of that. You better do something that makes them really lovable fast.
To move the story forward.
A lot of time with, right? And why should you spend that time with yourself being that way?
That's a really good point. Gosh, so I like that.
Come to the five girls. Spend time with them.
That's awesome. So is that everything under the sanity cushion, or have we got more?
Well, I think one of the things I try to think a lot about in sanity is that's it with sanity, not insanity, is sustainability. And do I want to keep doing this? Do I want to?
Yeah.
100 years ago at an RWA conference, a well-established traditionally published author, I was griping that I wasn't good at going to the publisher parties. I wasn't good at schmoozing with the editors and agents. Possibly told the truth too much. Anyhow, I was not good at it, and I was griping about it. And she said, you know, you could do it. If you really wanted to, you could do it. Be that sort of person. But then if you succeed, you have to keep being that person.
Mm.
And I thought, no, don't want to do that. Nope. Mm,
yeah.
But boy, has that stuck with me.
Yeah.
That choose the things that you can sustain, not just time and energy and emotion, but can sustain with your values.
Yeah.
You know, your ethics, that you want to keep doing this 35 years, you know?
Mm.
Now, 35 years might be my cap. I mean, I have not taken a vacation that didn't have to do with family or writing or both since 1988.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's time.
Your listeners are all going to go, I wasn't born then. I don't want to hear it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it is sustainable because I've been doing it so long. But I don't know.
Is that what you want, or do you want a different life?
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a really good question, Cheryl. And I am seriously looking, are there ways to streamline, minimalize the business? I don't know. I will tell you that out there on the internet, there are very few responses when you ask for ways to minimize, you know, to go minimalist with a business or to streamline. Mm. Lots of things about gearing up.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a very big myth around you have to hustle, you have to do all the hours and work hard and
all the things all the time.
To be anywhere successful. So I like that. Yeah. Maybe that's something we can have for a future podcast episode.
Well, I was going to say, I would love to see your actual actions for that. Trisha, because I think that you're the kind of person that can do it. And then
we'll get you on next. We'll talk about that. Streamlining.
No pressure.
No pressure about that, but we want to do it right now.
But you've got 6 months.
We'll get you back in 6 months to see how it goes.
Yeah. Awesome. I think there have got to be ways to do it. And I'm, to some extent, I'm being forced into this because my longtime assistant is retiring at the end of June.
Oh, no.
Yes. And this is somebody I work with for decades at the Washington Post. We knew, I mean, literally, we went through wars together. So all she knew about publishing when we started was listening to me bitch for 23 years. And, you know, but had great loyalty and, you know, great trust. And, you know, now oddly she wants to stop working. Don't understand.
Who does she think she is?
How rude. Who does she think
people
she is?
Do? I mean, that's time I hear.
That's another good sanity cushion too, is having people around you who you trust and you can rely on and those kinds of things.
Oh, I thought you were going to say having them quit.
No, they're not allowed to quit.
Never allowed to quit.
No.
Yeah. But it does bring up what do I do now? And I am tending toward trying to figure out ways to do less.
That's awesome.
There you go.
And it comes back to my number one reason, get these people out of my head. There's a lot of business stuff I can give up and still get these people out of my head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, am I willing to write books for no money? Probably not. Mm. So somewhere in between.
Happy medium.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's love to hear what you guys think about.
Yeah, all those kinds of things.
Maybe we'll do a podcast on that next.
Yeah.
Watch the space. Watch the space.
I would be really love to hear that. Your ideas.
Well, that's going to be a topic now. I can already see it happening. Okay.
Shard's already writing it down.
Yeah, you're writing it down. So I think, though, that it might be the end of our time together today.
Yeah, I've been at it.
But it's been fascinating. I've really enjoyed talking about
this. It's wonderful to see you guys.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you.
So good to have you.
So if someone wants to find you, look up your books, or even find, if we can repeat the website about how to find your why as well. So give us all those.
It's three words on writing. You just Google three words on writing and Patricia McLinn, and it should come up. And I'm also going to send some links for various reasons. Should be in the show notes, I hope. My website is, oddly enough, patriciamclinn.com.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Shock to us all.
I'm selling direct, which, you know, control like that, direct communication with the readers. And that is shop.patriciamclinn.com. Nice. I thought long and hard about that. Other people said, well, maybe store. And I thought, you know, if it's store.patriciamclinn.com, it feels like I'm being put in storage.
Brilliant.
Nice. And then, you know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, a little bit on Pinterest and YouTube.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you so much for all of that.
Thank you, guys.
And Shah, where can we be found?
We can be found at selfpublishingauthorspodcast.com. I threw that in there because we also have two domain names, but probably easier to go to spargirlspodcast.com. And links to everything that Pat's talked about today will be in the show notes as well, and also on our show notes and YouTube. So make sure to read them all and give us a click and a like. That would be make us super happy.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
So thank you, Patricia, and thank you to all of our listeners for joining us for another episode of the Spar Girls Podcast. We'll be back again next week. But for now, farewell.
Bye.
Bye.